Today's daf from the Sechet Sotah, brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh, is daf Lamed Aleph. And that's exactly what this daf is about. Are we supposed to read things with a Lamed Aleph, or are we supposed to read things with a Lamed Vav? Now that's exactly the issue, so it's very, very fitting. So the question over here was, remember that we learned in the Mishnah, Bo Bayom Darash Reb Yeshua Ben Hurkanus, Shelo Avad Iyov Ela Mi Ahava, because he says Lu Yuktoleni Lo Ayachel. So then we said, but it's still Shakul. How do we read that? Lo Ayachel, I will not be Miachel, or Lo Ayachel with a Vav, I will be Miachel. So now the Toshua Shantz points out, we have so many cases where we have a Kriya Nekziv and we're Derech specifically. The different meanings. And so we would say, you know, that in all cases, we understand that there's the applications of lo. So you asher lo choma, it had a choma, but it doesn't currently have a choma, so on and so forth. So why over here all of a sudden is this a big issue? So the way he's masber it is that here, the simple meaning of lo ayachel, in other cases where we don't have any kind of real way of looking at it otherwise. So that's lo ayachel. So we said we have the same issue of, as we're going to, you know, let's even see it first in the Gemara, so I can tell you more about what he says on the Gemara Gufa. So it says over here that lo ayachel, says the Gemara, well, why don't we just look at how it's spelled? I mean, let's say hi lo. Is it spelled Lamed Aleph, or is it Lamed Vav? Then that will explain to us how we derish it. Wait a minute, that's not true. Kol Echad Echsiv Lamed Aleph. And when it says Lamed Aleph, it means Lamed Aleph, not. So then how are you going to understand Behold Saratam Lo Tsar? Now over there it says Lamed Aleph. That means what, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't care? So in all of the tsaras that Klal Yisrael had, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't care. Is that what it means? Hachinami Delohu. V'chite ma'achinami, maybe he'll say, well, maybe so. V'achtiv lo, that's the end of the pasuk. U'malach panav hoshiyam. So how can you think that it means that? It says at the end, b'chol tzaratam lo tzar. U'malach panav hoshiyam ba'avato v'chimlato. I mean, I understand, what are you going to say? That means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't care. So obviously, lo means that it bothered him very much. So in other words, it's clear that lo can be understood even if it's written with a lamed aleph. Mashma achi, umashma achi. So over here also, hein yiktaleni lo ayachel, we would have the same kind of question. So it's here that the Tosh Rishans points out that to understand the meaning of the lo tsar could also have been the reason that we left it open here like that, is because the lo tsar could mean it wasn't really a tsar. Because after all of the things that happened specifically in order to destroy the Eve Yisrael. So maybe that's what it means, that what looked like locally a big problem wasn't really a problem, which of course was the whole point of Yitzias Mitzrayim and the Kriyas Yamsuf and so on. What are you sitting here davening for? This is not a problem, this is a solution. Okay, in any event, so therefore, we weren't sure. So in order to be able to prove it, Reb Yeshua Ben Hurkanus had to go and bring a raya for what it is that he was clearly saying. And he obviously meant that he's not going to drop his emuna no matter what. Now, once we heard that, so we said, oh, Reb Yochanan Ben Zakkai, you used to think that Iyov was only Eivedes Hashem Mitoch Yirah, and here we find that we have now your Talmud saying that, no, it's actually mitoch ava. Tanya, Rabbi Meir Omer, it says beferish that Iyov was a yirei Elohim. That's the lashon of the pasuk, tam v'yashar v'yirei Elohim v'sar mira. But the thing is, it uses that same lashon by Avram Avinu. V'nema yirei Avraham b'Avraham, yirei Elohim b'Avraham ata yadati, yirei Elohim ata. Now, we know for a fact that even though it is explaining and defining Avram Avinu, by HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself says, I know you're Yorei Elohim, but we know that that was Mi'ava Because it says Beferish Avram Ohavi, right? So just like the Yirei Elohim Amur Bi Avraham Mi'ahava, so then when it says Yirei Elohim by Iyov, it also means Mi'ahava, and you can't limit it to mean Dafka Mitoch Yira. By the way, how do we know Avram Gufa Minolan? Dichtiv Zera Avraham Ohavi. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself defines Avram as a lover. So you can't say that he's only a Yorei. My Ika Ben Oseh Mi'ahava. Because the zechus of the one who is oved miyira is oved for 1,000 dereis, but the zechus of someone who is oved miava is oved for 2,000 dereis. Because look, it says k'tivacha la alafim la ohavai ula shomrei mitzvotai. So this is for thousands of generations, and even though it mentions Ohavai, we'll see le'alafim le'olavai u'le'shomrei mitzvotai. So that's thousands. That's multiple. Even though it mentions le'shomrei, we're going to talk about that in a moment. V'hasam k'siv v'nogea, the idea of shmira. Shmira is always the lotasa. Shmira is the getter of yira. So it says over there le'shomrei mitzvotav le'elav dor. Wait a minute. That's very sneaky. It mentions in the pasuk lo ohavav lo shomrei mitzvotav le'elav dor. I like the way you leave out the first word, and then it sounds like it's talking about a yorei. So how do you explain that? And so both of them mention both ava and yira. Yes, of course, that's true. But one of them uses the alafim closest to lo ohavav, and the other one uses le'elav dor closest to lo shomrei mitzvotav. So we take a look at the one that the Elef, or the Alpayim, or the multiple Alafim, is closest to. There were two Talmidim that were learning by Rava. And they asked him about their dreams. So one of them told Rava, Akriyon d'chamai, ma rav tuvacha asher tzafanta l're'echa. And the other one said, I had a dream in which they read to me the pasuk v'yismechu kol chosevach l'olam yiranenu v'yaltzu v'cha ohavei shemecha. So he said, boy, I wish I had dreams like that. Tarvaychu rabon and tzadiki gemurei aton. You obviously are both have such beautiful psukim read to you in your dreams. You're both tzadikim gemurei. The difference between you is one of you that they read the pasuk ohavei shemecha is eved mi'ava umar mi'yira. Hadron aloch kishem shashma oprich is ready over here. Hadron aloch kishem shamayim bodkim.
Bli neder, folk in the helike perek.
Does that mean that both their levels are equal in terms of their tzitzkot, their righteousness?
Yeah.
They both got their different pathways.
Yes.
Which contradicts a Rama, which Ava is greater than Yira. How do we understand that?
That's not in terms of tzedek. Both of you are tzaddikim gemurim. This is a different issue. Tzaddikim means that he does everything right. Doesn't necessarily mean he's on the darga of Hava or only Mi'ira. Also, there's a bit of a confusion in the sugya, actually, to be honest. The confusion in the sugya is that the Gemara elsewhere talks about the nature of the Yira of Avram, that the Yira of Avram was Novea Mitoich Ava. And that complication of the way that Ava itself leads to a higher Madrega of Yira, because there's different Madregas of Yira. That's obvious. There's a Yira in the sense of caring about what happens to you, where you are number one. So that's Yira Schet. And then there's a getter of Yira in which the awe of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's the Darga of Yira that the Rambam talks about in Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah, where he starts with Ava and then goes to Yira, so which is generally called Yirat HaRamamut, but it comes from a deeper awareness. I think Baruch Avram is having trouble over here staying up again. Wake up, Baruch Avram. No, you're muted, thank heavens. Your responses are not what's important. It's your eyes. You muted yourself again by accident, but that's okay. Yaakov and Hashemayim. I thought it was one of those dreams of love. Okay, so we're ready to begin now a very, very strange perek. Because as Tosfos points out, the poshness of this perek is that it does not belong here. What in the world are we going back to deal with the issues that we finished right at the beginning of the Masechet? And now we're all of a sudden raising the issues again in the machlokas of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. And like, what in the world is going on? But as we'll see, there's really a very big machlokas Rishonim as to how exactly to understand the case here. So actually, Tosfos, in his own pshat, as we'll see, is consistent in pointing out that this Mishnah really belongs as a continuation of the original Mishnah that opened up the Masechet. And perhaps it's because of that that the Rambam gives a completely different explanation to the entire thing. And I noticed this has caught Gavi's attention, so he's actually going to sit still in that car for a minute so that he can concentrate. I don't know how much comes in, but I hope it isn't too much, because Chas v'Shalom, when it's dangerous to drive. But on the other hand, I don't know when it is you manage to do it. Okay, so let's take a look at the Mishnah. So, Misha kineli ishto v'nistira. Afilu shoma mi'ofa poreach, yotzi v'yitein kituva divi Rebbe Eliezer. Very, very strange thing. So, okay, according to Rebbe Eliezer, remember, that according to him, if the husband himself believes that after giving a real kinui, meaning that he has two edim, so really we only need one aid according to that, and it doesn't have to be an aid who's kosher, and that was his sheet to remember back in the very first daf, that even al pi eid echad, that's perfectly okay. And that actually is the way Rashi understands the word, afilu shama mi'of haporeach, even if he heard by a passing bird. What do you mean you heard? From a passing bird. So Rashi, that's it, from a passing bird. It means something that's the equivalent of a tzivtzuf ha'ofes. So that would mean, let's say you heard something from a shivcha or something from an eved. Since we're talking about over here an eid echad, and the Torah, whenever we have an eid echad, is not makbid, there has to be an eid kosher. So because of that, the Mishnah is mechane it a passing bird. But actually, exactly, but little birdie told me. That's where this comes from, is this Mishnah. But only according to the way the Rambam understands, because the Rambam understands it literally, a little birdie told me. So what that means, so some understand that what the Rambam, actually there's two girsaot. It's interesting I shouldn't say two girsaot. There are two different, there were many translations made, right, of the Rambam's Pirush HaMishnayos. So in one of the translations, which is the translation that the Meiri has, so it talks about the ofafot of the bird. Masha Enkein, in the other translation, which we have, is the tzivtzufa ofot, which actually some of the Achronim say, is very cute, that what it's referring to is like a parrot, which sometimes the parrot will say over something that it heard, right? So here's the passing parrot saying, so how are you, honey bum? This is this guy who's talking to his wife. So now he knows from the parrot that his wife was in his terrace. Very, very cute shot. Anyway, but we'll see that this is going to make a big nafkamina in how we interpret the Mishnah, because it isn't very clear over here whether we're talking about prior to stira or subsequent to Stira, and what he heard was that they already had relations, not just that she was in Stira. Okay, so this, I'll talk about this in a moment. Let's first take a look at the Machlokas and Rabbi Yeshua. Oh, what?
Is this like circumstantial evidence, like a tape recording?
Yeah. We'll talk about it. Let me just finish first the Mishnah so we can understand the problems that are raised by this Mishnah. So what is the halacha over here? The halacha is he has to divorce her. Mashma, he cannot be mashka her. And he has to pay her the ksuvah, because he doesn't have real, why pay her the ksuvah? Because he doesn't have real testimony. We'll see in a moment. And so Taina's Rebbe Eliezer. Rebbe Yeshua says, no, he's not mechuyev to divorce her. Ad sheyisu v'yitnuba Muzerot Balavanas. Remember, we had the idea of the women who are like, they do their spinning together at night, and that's where they give over all of the rumor mongering and everything that's going on in town. So if they've been talking about her in the nighttime gossip, so we call that the moon gossip, right? This is, I'm being followed by a moon shadow. But this is the wrong shadow. So even there, there's no mashma, no paying leksuva, but he's not mechuyev to divorce her. Now remember, there's big machlokas, as Tosfos points out, between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel about divorce. According to Beit Shammai, you're not allowed to divorce without kira'a bar vatavar. According to Beit Hillel, you are allowed to divorce even if you don't like the way she makes your coffee. So that's a tremendous nafkamina, but Tosfos points out that still, this is not a chiev to divorce, it's just a heter to divorce. So because of that, it would be nogea, both Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Okay, so what are we talking about over here? Are we talking about prior to the actual stira? We're talking about this is the stira? Or what happened over here? Was there a separate stira? It's not clear at all. All right. So first of all, we have this machlokas. According to Rashi, the ofa pareach means it's just a way of referring to a posel aid would be an aid echad, even an eved, even a shivcha. According to others, ofa pareach is a way of talking about rumors. Why? Because the posek says ki ofa shamayim yolich atakol. So that's the Rashi's pshat. The Rambam, the Pashtus of the Rambam, is mashman is talking about actual tzif-tzuf, as I said, of the ofot, or it could be that he is using some kind of, you know, weird, magical kind of thing, where this is what he believes. And he heard that she was nisteret in this way. So this is where the Rashash says it's talking about a parrot, and so on. Now, there's basically a very important machlokas, because according to Rebbe, the way Rashi is learning, and actually the Rosh points out that in the Yerushalmi, this is a machlokas in the Gemara, about how to understand this Mishnah. But in any event, Rashi understands that Rebbe Eliezer is talking about that he hears in this way that she was nisteret, and that allows him to be mashka. So this is Rebbe Eliezer going according to the shita that he said in the first Mishnah, you don't need to aid him for stira. And when it says over here, yotzivi yitain ktuva, it means, listen, if you don't want to go ahead and be mashka, then you're going to have to be motzivi yitain ktuva, because it's your fault, like we saw before, it's your fault that you're unable to check this out and to be mezakar. So therefore, you're going to have to pay her. The Rashbam explains that we're talking about something over here that cannot, it's not a real aid. It's just like rumors or things that he believes. Because of that, on the basis of such things, he is not allowed to be mashka. Because when we said that you need to have one witness, it means one witness. It doesn't mean rumor mongering. So therefore, of course, you're not able to be mashka her. But because of the fact that you believe that this is what happened, and or we have cases where, that again, depending how you learn it, according to the pshat, that it means that there's rumors that people are talking about, so then that means that it's an ugly thing. It's a dover mechuar, and the rabbanon were mechayev you to be divorcing her, but they can't force her to lose her ksuva on that basis. So because of that, min rabbanon, you would be motzi her, and you would give her the ksuva. So those are the first two shitas. Either, according to Rashi, that we're talking about, this is grounds for hashkaya, and when it says yotzivi ten ksuva, it means if you don't want to give her the mashka of the mayim, according to Rashbam, you cannot give her the mashka, and some of the Balei Tosfos also say this, you cannot give her the water based on this, because you need a real edus. But on the other hand, the Rabbanu were mechayev you to be megarisher. And since there's no real edus of the stira, so you're still mechuyev to give her her ksuva. Fine. Okay, this is Bechlal a question. At what point? Tosfos holds that we're not talking about nistra. We're talking about rumors that she was mizana with the guy after kinui. So because it's after kinui, the kinui creates a raglayim ladavar, and therefore in this case, according to Beis Hillel, it becomes a mitzvah to be megarisher, and according to Beit Shammai, it's now a chiyuv to be megarisher, where normally you can't. The Pashtus, the third approach, the Pashtus is according to the Rambam that it's talking about after a real kinui vestira. And now the rumors here, the ofa poreach, however we understand that, is talking about that she was nitma'a. So because of that, since he believes that she was nitma'a, there's this level of rumor mongering that she was nitma'a, he's not allowed to be mashker. So because of that, he has to be motzi, and therefore he has to give her the ksuva. Tosfos says, how could that be? It doesn't make sense to say that she's not able to be shaysa and that he needs to give the ksuva. Because if she's not able to be shaysa, not through a fault of his, but through the fact that everybody is talking about it, so then why would he still be mechuyev to give the ksuva? That doesn't make any sense. We find the Kesef Mishnah asking on the Rambam the same question. Why would she have a ksuva? Why would this not be the same as the Gemara that we had? Again, Bizman Hazeh, remember we said? So over there, if somebody was Mekana and there was Stira Bizman Hazeh, she's Yotza without a ksuva Bizman Hazeh. So he leaves this as a kasha on the Rambam. Many of the Rishonim, including the Or Sameach, says, what kind of kasha is this? There's a tremendous difference between Bizman Hazeh, when a guy says to his wife, don't be alone with the boss, where he knows that if she does, then he's not going to be able to be giving her mayim because we don't have a Beis Hamikdash, and she knows that that's the situation, so then it's her fault that she doesn't have the ksuva. And that does not in any way resemble a case where everything meant that she was supposed to be able to get the mayim, and then after the stira, we get this kol which prevents the hashkoya. And therefore, it's a completely different case. Why would she lose the ksuva based on something like that? Okay. Those are the shitas. Now, you'll notice that according to the way the Rambam is learning, the Seder of the Mishnah already makes sense. Because the way Tosfos is learning that we're talking about before kinui v'stira, and the question over here is whether this is considered to be stira, he's 100% right, consistent with his approach, that this Mishnah belongs immediately after the first Mishnah. But according to the Rambam, we're talking about a completely different idea over here. The kinui v'stira we dealt with at the beginning of the Masechet. And now we talk about how it is that you deal with the Hashkoya and what it is that allows you to where it is that you cannot be Mashka and so on. So therefore, after all of that, we want to talk about the case where it's impossible ex post facto, even though originally was no reason not to be Mashka, because of here, after the Kinui Vestira, we have rumors, but not real edus, about Tuma. Okay, so those are the three basic approaches, and as you could see, it will make a big difference in terms of the Seder HaMishnah. So now, let's get back to the case where we have a regular stira. According to Rabbi Yeshua, we have the stira with two edim. According to Rabbi Eliezer, even with an eight puzzle, which according to Rashi is what it means when it says a flying bird. So suppose we have an eid echad. So Omar eid echad, aniri itiya shenit mit. Once you have an eid for tuma, lo hayta shota. Velo od, ela afilu eved, afilu shivcha, hare elu ne'amanim. And remember, we darshan this from the pasuk ve'eid ein ba. So even, that means that even if we would have any kind of eidus at all, so then, lo hayta shota, velo od, ela afilu eved afilu shivcha, hare elu ne'emanim, and not only are they ne'emanim, they're ne'emanim after Poslamic Tuvata. So remember, once we have the Raglayim Ladava, Charekina Venistera, then we believe even the Eid Echad to be Mafsid Haradiksuva because of this Raglayim Ladava. Fine. How about the five women who are never believed in Eidus against another woman, even when Eid Echad is Nemenet? And who is that? Her mother-in-law. Well, mother-in-laws don't like daughter-in-laws. So we believe that she would lie. And her mother-in-law's daughter, Atsora, if this husband is married to another woman, obviously she doesn't like her. Her Yevama, who is possibly going to become Atsora to her if her husband dies. Her husband's daughter, where usually stepdaughters don't like their mean stepmommies. So in all of these cases, they're not believed. But over here, because of the fact, they are believed, but only to say that you cannot be mashka. And they're asher, therefore, on the husband, but they are not believed in financial matters. And because of that, lola poslamik tuvata, ela shalotishte. So their belief extends to the fact that they're going to have to get divorced because he can't be mashker because we're chashish for the Eidus. But we can't be mafsid or ksuva based on that. How do we know all of this? Well, Shaya Bedin, wouldn't you have thought, again, we had all of this before. Remember, we discussed even these words, Shaya Bedin, at the beginning of the Masechet. So Shaya Bedin, you would have thought, if it wouldn't be that the Torah said otherwise, you would have thought that, I mean, if even the Edut Rishona, which is talking about the Stira, were over there in Osarta, would be Isur, it's not going to Asur her, Isur Olam, because, I mean, you could check it out, right? All it does is Asurs her until she drinks from the Mayim HaMa'arim. But it's not an absolute end to their relationship. And over there, you need two witnesses, even for that level of Isser, for temporary Isser. Eina mitkayemet bepachot mishnayim. We know over there that you need real Eidus. And that we're going to go over how we got these from the Pesukim, even though we did this before. This is going, of course, to Libra the Rabbi Yeshua, that for Stira, you need Shnei Eidim. And over there, it's not such a terrible disaster, because she can still become muteret by drinking. So the Eidus Achrona that says that she was actually nitmate and she's not allowed to drink, and therefore it's Osartai Sur Olam, she's never going to be able to be with her husband again, based on this testimony. I mean, isn't it clear that then you're going to need stronger indications and better witnesses? So Einodin Shalotit Kayem Bipachot Mishnayim? That's why the Torah says specifically that in this case, the Eid Einba, Eid Einba, Yishachav Ish Otah Shechvat Zera. Sorry, my phone was set to go off from notifications in the morning, but it's Say Shabbos, it's not so smart. So, Yishachav Ish Otah Shechvat Zera, V'ne'elam Me'inei Isha, V'nistera, V'hinitma, V'eid Einba, Vilonitvasa. So what is the meaning of that Eid Einba? So the Eid Einba, again, the Mishnah presents things in sort of a Pshutai Shel Mikra approach, which the Gemara actually makes, if you recall, a technical idea, that Kol Makom Shenemar Eid, it means Shnei Eidim. So the Pashtus, the Mishnah is saying, the Eid Einba, which means that if there were any Eidut whatsoever, Kol Eidut Sheyeshpa would have been sufficient to answer her. So basically, even though in the end we're going to prove that this, it's funny that Rashi actually in the Chumash takes the simple meaning, because again, Al Pi Pshutai, that's the meaning of the word Ve'ed Einba, that there's no indications whatsoever. That's the Eid Einba. That's the simple pshat, which is that the limud is that since it says there's no aid at all, So over there, you come and you bring her to be mashka, because that's the next pasuk. Mashma. If there would be any eders, so then you can't. You would be unable to be mashka, which would mean that even an eid echad is neman. Now, that is not the real meaning of the drasha. Nonetheless, according to the Gemara, nonetheless, Rashi, in the Pirush of the Pasuk, actually brings the simple meaning of the Mishnah, kol edut sheyeshba. Okay, so al pi pshuta shel mikra, this is an easy way to remember it. So therefore, the Torah teaches us that any edus for tuma is neman. And as we explained it, there's a reason for that. What's the reason? The reason is, as we said, that there's regalayim ledavar. So even though this is a bigger isser, and you would think it's not neman, since there's regalayim ledavar, the Torah teaches us we're samech on any edus that there is. Now, once we know that, why don't we turn around and say a kal vachomer in the opposite direction? That if that's the case, kal vachomer le'edut harishona miata. So now we should say, if even the edut achrona about tuma, which osarta Yisrael alam, and she'll never be able to be with her husband, avreyu mitkayemet be'ed echad. So kol shekein, the edut harishona, which was just stira, and only asers her until such time as she's shota. So kol shekein, and adin shetitkayem be'ed echad, Talmud lomar, that's why it says, beferish, ki matzaba ervat davar. Now you know, and I know, that this is not the basis. The basis was, remember, that we had a miut. Ba velo bekinoi, or ba velo bestira. So Gemara's going to ask, wait a minute over here. The Mishnah is bringing in something that is not the correct pasuk to quote. And we're going to change the meaning of the Mishnah to be discussing a straight-out testimony of znus without kinoi vestira. So that actually, the Gemara is going to change this. But the Pashtus, the Mishnah is saying that when we're talking about divorce, so it says over there that he's giving her a get, ki matzaba ervat davar. Mashma, that there had to be a real ervat davar. That's the straight out, ki yikachi shisha, uba'ala v'ayayim lotip tzachin be'inav, ki matzaba ervat davar. And ervat davar means that he must have heard about it from two witnesses. Why? Because since it says the lashon of davar, and by the din of shnei edim, it says al pi shnei edim yakum davar. So just like the davar, in terms of the din of edus over there, is al pi shnayim, afkan al pi shnayim. Okay, now let's go and talk about contradictions in the testimony of these edim. Whether it's an ed echad or two edim, what would be the din? So suppose you have one ed that says she's nitmate, and one of them says she's not nitmate. Now this is talking about an aid for pashtus, an aid that is kosher. So they contradict each other. One says, I saw her actually sleeping with this guy. And the other one says, well, I was right there and I definitely saw that they did not go all the way. Let's say there was an isha. So there was an aid pasul that says she was nitmate. And another woman says, no, she wasn't nitmate. So then the halacha is that she would still be able to be shota. So in other words, even though the Torah believes one aid, but if there's a contradiction by another aid, then the Torah doesn't believe that aid. That's what it seems to be saying. And we're left with a suffix. And since we're left with a suffix, we then are able to use the ma'im amorim, right? That's what it seems to be saying. So in this event, she could still be shota. Now, suppose one aid says she's with nitmate, and two aidim say she wasn't nitmate. I mean, this doesn't seem very necessary to say, does it? Gemara's going to discuss all of these strange cases. So the idea over there was, yes, haita shota, because we're left with a suffix. Shnayim omrim nitmate. How about if two say that she was definitely tmeya? And one says she was not tmeya. So then, lo haita shota. Now, all of these things are contradictory to each other in terms of the implications. And, okay, in this case, we have two aidim that are believed apparently more than one aid. And since they're saying, if there was two aidim claiming that she was nitmeis, so then one aid wouldn't help to recreate the suffix. Now, we're going to go through all of the different cases. in the Gemara. Says the Gemara, first of all, the Mishnah is not bringing the right pasuk. We know what the pasuk is. We had this back at the beginning of the Masecha. Talmud lomar ki matzaba ervat avar. Wrong. Talmud lomar ba. Ba velo bekinoi. This is eight ain ba. Ba velo bekinoi. Ba velo bestira. That's what it should have said. Why does it bring in this pasuk? You're right, you're right. Hachinamika Amar, fine, stick that in. That is what it says. Talmud Omar Ba. Ba Valo Bekinoi, Ba Valo Bestira. Now, insert, new question. What about Tuma Bialma? How about Stam? If you have a witness that says, I saw your wife being Nitma'a, without Kinoi, without Stira, over there, it's clear, because all of this is all a discussion after Kinoi Vestira. How do we know that? Ah, that we know because Nemar Kan Davar, V'Nemar La'alan Davar, Ma'alan B'Shneidim, Afkan B'Shneidim. So now let's get to the meat of the problem over here. Because these cases are very confusing. Okay, so you're started off with a case of Eid Echad Nitmeit, and you have an Eid Amar Lo Nitmeit. Now, the implication is very clearly over here that it's because of that fact that we've got this hakasha of the witnesses, that is the only reason that we say that she's going to be drinking, okay? So that means that time is a kamakish light. If we wouldn't have that witness that was against the other witness, so then, as we said before, an Eid Echad would be Nema. Now, that's sort of obvious because the Mishnah said so beferish right before this. I mean, we had a pasuk. There's no reason for me to have to go over this as a diuk, except that we want to use it to get into the next case. So, how do we know, first of all, that an Eid Echad is Neman? And now the Gemara is going to give us its analysis of Eid Ein Ba, not like the pshat, the simple pshat that Rashi mentioned, but rather the way that we were masbir the pasuk at the beginning of the Masechet. The Tana Rabbana, the Eid Ein Ba means that there were no two Eidim. Bishnayim akatuv midaber, there's no two Eidim. But then if there's one Eid, so then if he lo nitfasa, so then she is asura. Okay. So that means one aid means she cannot drink. Now, you say that this means the word aid means two witnesses. I mean, what I learned in my third grade grammar class is that aid means one, not two. So where the heck did you come off saying this? Oh, ain't no ela be'echad, like it's mashma. Aid ain't, but it's not a single witness. Talmud lomar, lo yakum aid echad be'ish. Why does it say aid echad? Why doesn't it say, lo yakum eid ba'ish? If you're so clear that the meaning of the word eid is a single witness, so why doesn't the Torah think that it means that? How come it says, lo yakum eid echad ba'ish? Mimash v'shenema lo yakum eid eini yodea shu echad? So ma tamad lomar echad, the very fact that the Torah has to specify one eid using the word eid is to teach me that otherwise, it's a b'nei av that komakom shenemar aid means testimony, not an individual being made. So when it says aid, it means that there are two witnesses, which is a definition of testimony and not a testifying entity. That's the point. So if you want to talk about a witness, you have to say an aid echad. So komakom shenemar aid, harekan shnayim, ad shifrot l'cha katuv echad. Now, what is the meaning there for the pasuk? Okay, so according to this, Amar Rachmana, there were no two witnesses, meaning there was no edut. That means that there may be a witness, right? So there's one witness. There's not two witnesses. And since it continues on, and she wasn't forced, wait a minute. I thought we haven't established yet that she even slept with the guy. Oh, yes, we did. On what basis? On the Eid Echad. Where the Eid Ein Ba means there weren't two, but there was one. This is very different than the simple meaning of the way that we read the Mishnah and the way Rashi used it in the meaning of the pasuk. But now we have a technical description of how exactly to understand that word of 8 Ainba. Now, the problem is that this leads to a massive issue, and that is that the Torah now is defining the testimony that is definitive about a woman who was Nistera as being a single witness. Now, that means that in this case, for whatever reason, I mean, we know it's because of Raglayim, Ladover, and so on, but it means that the Torah has said, in this particular case, one witness equals two witnesses. Now, that creates a tremendous issue. Because remember that, kivan de midaraita et achad mehiman, if one witness is good enough, how can you have a single witness contradicting another witness where the Torah believed that witness is the equivalent of two witnesses? Because remember what Ula taught us, v'amar Ula, kol makom she'emina Torah et achad, if one witness is the equivalent of two witnesses, then that means it is fully the equivalent of two full witnesses. And if one witness contradicts him, we ignore the single witness, because ein dvar rav shel echad b'mokom shnayim. Exactly in the same way, if we have a contradiction between two witnesses in court and a single witness, that's not a contradiction, because a single witness in face of real edus, which is two witnesses, is meaningless. Because remember, edus is an entirely different issue than evidence, correct? One witness is evidence. Two witnesses is we're looking at what happened. And therefore, I really don't care about evidence, because it's irrelevant when I know what happened. So the Torah says, based on these two witnesses, you know what happened. If you're telling me that one witness is telling you what happened, so how can we pay any attention to the single witness? And yet the Mishnah is full of these, and one witness says this, and one witness says that, and if one witness said she was Nitma, and one witness said she wasn't Nitma, then they cancel each other out. What? They don't cancel each other out. So what are you going to say? Oh, says Ula, no, you guys have the Mishnah all wrong. The Mishnah is supposed to say that if one witness says Nitma'a and one witness says Lo Nitma'a, Lo Aita Shota. It should say she wasn't going to drink. Why? Because Ein Varav Shalachet B'Makom Shnayim. And your Girsa in the Mishnah of Haita Shota is all wrong. V'chein Omar Reb Yitzchak, Lo Haita Shota, because one witness cannot contradict the single witness that the Torah considered to be absolutely Ne'aman. But Reb Chiya says, nonsense. Haita Shota. The Mishnah is 100% correct, and she is still in a matzav of safek. I understand. So, and according to Reb Chiya, what are you going to do with the meaning of Ula? I mean, what Ula says is an understanding directly of the Pasuk's giving Ne'amanus to one aid. You can't throw that out the window and say it's meaningless. What's Rabbi Chiya going to do? Rabbi Chiya says, it's very simple, gentlemen. The Torah only gives one aid the position of two aidim once the Besdin was mekabel his aiders. So that establishes the facts as if there were two aidim. But suppose two witnesses walk into court at the same time, and one of them says, I saw that she was Nitma'a. And the other one says, I was there. You did not see she was Nitma'a. She was not Nitma'a. So what about Ben? Then says Rabbi Chiya, obviously, we're not going to accept that aid in the first place. Because as far as we can see, there's no reason why his aider should be Ne'aman. So once it enters into the court records, and now it has been established, I'll be bested that we accepted this aid, and then another aid shows up to contradict him, you're 100% Ula. Once we believe the Eid Echad, Ein Dvarav Shel Echad B'Mokom Shnayim, becomes he becomes two witnesses. Lokasha Kandavat Achad Kan Bezeh Achar Zeh. There's obviously a difference, says Rabbi Chiya, between the Eid Echad that the Bezdin was Mekabel, then that establishes that it's the to aid him, because the Adas is the Adas that the Torah said you have to look at. But what if they both walk into Bezdin at the same time, and one is saying, I saw her that she was Nitmeit, and the other one is saying, well, I saw that she wasn't, I was there right next to you. So I don't know what you're talking about. So at that point, the Bezdin is not going to accept an Adas Mukheshet in order to create a situation that the Torah views it as completely reliable. They know it's not. If it's been accepted, says Rabbi Chiya, then it has a din of two Adim. But before that, we completely treat it like any normal Hakasha, and therefore the Mishnah makes perfectly good sense. Because what we're talking about in the Mishnah is where they came in at the same time. If they came in at the same time, then the Bezdin says, okay, listen, we don't hear either of you, because we don't know what happened, and that's the whole point of drinking the Mesota. When we don't know what happened, we drink the Mesota. Masha Inken Ula, I understand. I agree 100% with Ula. And if the Bezdin was Makabal and Eid Echad, then if an Eid Echad comes afterwards, we laugh him out of court. We already have two witnesses. That is to say, the equivalent of two witnesses. So very simple explanation. Now, the problem is that remember that the Mishnah had a number of very strange cases in which the cases actually seem to contradict each other in terms of their implications. Now, I would suggest that we should look again at the end of the Mishnah just to remember how strange it is. Right at the end of the Mishnah, same daf, Eid Omer Nitmeit, Ve'Eid Omer Lo Nitmeit. Okay, so that's saying one witness against one witness, or an isha omeret nitmeit, v'isha omeret lo nitmeit, one apostle witness against apostle witness, she would still drink. Haita shota. Okay, and now Rabbi Chiya is saying, haita shota is talking about in a case where there are bo bevat achat. Then it seems to say things that are either unnecessary or don't make any sense. Echad omer nitmeit. One aide said she was nitmeit, and then two aidim say she was not nitmeit. So the idea over there is that it is hakasha. And since it's hakasha, we don't know, and therefore she does drink. Obviously, they don't know that she wasn't nitmeit, but what they're saying is we were there at that same time next to you. And certainly she was not nitmeit when you say she was nitmeit. I mean, obviously, we can't say for sure she was. The fair is not nitmeit, because then she wouldn't drink, of course, because we have witnesses she wasn't nitmeit during the entire stira. Okay, so in that case, it says she would drink. Shnayim omrim nitmeit, the echad omer lo nitmeit, lo aita shota. I mean, that's crazy. What do you mean if two witnesses say she was nitmeit? Even if one witness said she was nitmeit, we said before that we're not going to believe the second witness. So I'm so confused. I mean, what is the point of talking about the case for Shnayim Omrim Nitmeit? So that what? We're not going to believe two against one in that case and say that she should not drink? Is that what we would think? So you see that the end of the Mishnah is very confused. And now we're going to use the end of the Mishnah as an insight into this machlokas about how to read the Mishnah. Because Ula was claiming the Mishnah should read that if it was one against one, lo haita shota. And Rabbi Chiya says, no, the Mishnah makes perfectly good sense. And it says haita shota, because it's talking about where they came of atachat, and therefore we're left with a doubt as to what happened. We didn't have the case where the Bezdin had accepted them and therefore gave them the status of two witnesses. Therefore, says the Gemara, look at the crazy case at the end. We've got these two cases talking about two witnesses, okay? Which makes no sense. So now, Rabbi Chiya, how do you explain this? Eid omer nitmeit, v'shnayim omrim lo nitmeit, haita shota. What, obviously, there's no meaning to the actual statement, right? Because, I mean, why would I have to say that? Obviously, we're not going to believe one witness against the two witnesses if it's talking about the same situation where they came in at the same time. So let's go through the implications of this, says the Gemara to Rabbi Chiya. The mashma'ut is that the only reason that she is drinking in this case is because there were two witnesses that contradicted the witness who said that she wasn't itmate. But the implication is that if there was one witness, hachad v'chad, lo hayta shota. And in that case, we would believe the original witness. But that's the opposite of what Rabbi Chiya said. So that's tiyufta the Rabbi Chiya. So I don't understand what it is that the Mishnah is telling us, that the only meaning that the Mishnah has over here is to tell us the diuk. And the correct diuk is that the point of the Mishnah is to teach us how to read the case that was before. Because otherwise it's obvious, right, that we're not going to believe one witness against two witnesses if they come at the same time. Now, look, I know what's bothering you. Rabbi Chiya could just say very simply that maybe that's the whole point. The last part of the Mishnah is talking about whether two Aiden came after the Bez Din had been Mekabel, the first Aid, and therefore it's only because they're two Aiden that we believe them. And that's why if there were one Aid, we wouldn't believe them. That's what he could say, right? Because according to him, the only reason that the Mishnah says Haita Shota is because they walked into court at the same time, and therefore the court didn't accept them. So the reason that we don't say this, this is the way the Bach explains, because he deals with the Girsa Rashi a little bit later, and he says the pshat here is that since the meaning of the statement of the witnesses is, we were standing right there next to you, and we know for a fact that while you were there, she was not nitmate. That we could say. So since that's the case, it's unreasonable to say that the Mishnah is talking about that here they were standing together, and then one of them walks into court. The other ones don't bother coming into court. The Beis Din accepts their testimony. And now, all of a sudden, the other ones walk into court. I mean, why all of a sudden would they walk into court? If they were there with that aid, and they are sensitive to what's going on, so then they would walk into court at the beginning to tell them, pay no attention to this guy, he's a liar, right? So it's just not reasonable to say that this case is Dafka, the case where they did come at one. It doesn't make sense that they came one after the other. That's all. But ain't a chinami. I mean, there's no real way to prove it. So that means, if that's the case, that these last cases are absolutely meaningless. Obviously, we're not going to believe the first witness against two witnesses if we wouldn't believe the first witness even against one witness. So why did the Mishnah say it? I'll tell you why. Because the Mishnah wants to make sure that you do not make the mistake of reading the previous case the way Rabbi Chiya read the case. Therefore, it's saying, if two witnesses came, so then, and they said, lo nitmate, then and only then, haita shota. But if only one witness came to contradict the witness said nitmate, then the din would be, lo haita shota, ha ha, even if they were coming at the same time. And that's a raya to Ula against Rabbi Chiya, because there's no other meaning to this case. Cute, right? I hope you think it's cute. Okay? Hope that's clear. And Rabbi Chiya answers, yes, it's very cute, except that it's ridiculous. Because you're not reading the next case. And now read the next case, okay? You're claiming that the cases of the two witnesses are there in order to disprove Rabbi Chiya, that they don't have any meaning on their own, and that they're only there so that we should learn how to read the first cases properly and make sure that we don't make the fancy Rabbi Chiya mistake. Ha ha, that's what you say. So if that's what you say, explain the very last case, okay? Rabbi Chiya. Okay, so I'd love to see how you understand the last case. L'taymech, Ema Sefa, what's the last case? Two witnesses say that she wasn't at Mace. And one witness says that she was not nitmes. So there the din is lo haita shota. Okay, now you're claiming that the point here is to be midayik, that in the event that it was one against one, then she would drink. But I thought you were the guys who said if it was one against one, you would not drink. Now make up your mind. So if you're going to be medayik from the first case of the two against one, and it's only there in order to tell us, and what would be the din if it was one against one? So now make the same diyuk from the second case of two witnesses against one. So that would mean that we would come out with contradictory implications. What's the matter with you guys? Therefore, I, Rabbi Chiya, say, these cases are not there for their implications. These cases are there to teach us a whole new set of dinim. And because of the fact that you couldn't catch on to the new idea, that's why you thought, well, what are they here for? They don't teach us anything except how to read the previous cases. Is that really reasonable? They're here in order to tell me a whole new set. And what's that? The whole last part over here is talking about a different situation where all of the Aiden that are coming along here are puzzle. They're women. They're avodim. Whatever. And now that changes everything. How does that change everything? Because of Rabbi Nechemia. Rabbi Nechemia says that in any case where you are going to accept non-kosher witnesses. Now, the truth is that wherever the Torah says that we believe one witness, as we, where are those cases, by the way? Where does the Torah believe one witness? Well, we've got this case. We've got the case of Lo Noda Mihi Kahu, which we're going to be discussing very soon. And that's the case of Egla Rufa. And then we've also got the case, remember, of Eid Echad that we had was so important in Yevamos, where an Eid Echad reports to a woman that her husband has died overseas. And we're able, in order to avoid agunot, so we're able to accept that one aid. Now, the rule is, in such cases, that we will also believe psulim. Ah, but says Rabbi Nechemia, once you're talking about psulim, then you're talking about evidence, gentlemen. You're not talking about testimony. So it may well be that the halakha stretches that we will believe a new concept of testimony. One eid is testimony. But that's only if it's an eid kosher. Okay. The moment that it's not an eid kosher, it's not eidus at all. So then why did the Torah say you could pay attention to it? Because it's like evidence. All evidence is acceptable. So the fact that somebody walks in and said, I saw it. Well, that's evidence. Not totally persuasive evidence, but it's evidence. Now, if the Torah is ready to accept evidence in this case because of Raglayim Ladavar, who is Mr. iPhone and is telling us about supportive evidence, which is very nice, but we don't even know who he is. He must be Daniel. Who else would use these technical terms? That's his business. Excellent. Supportive evidence indeed. So now the question is, once you're talking about supportive evidence, now if you've got two people who say the opposite, now you have more supportive evidence in the other direction. Then you've got three people against the two people, then you've got more supportive evidence in that direction. So even though when it comes to testimony, numbers are totally meaningless. Once you have two witnesses, you're reconstructing the situation and not bringing evidence. So I don't care if you got a 10 million witnesses that disagree. They have no greater value than the two witnesses because you can't do more than reconstructing the reality, right? But once we're talking about evidence, surely three people are better than two and 10 people are better than five. So therefore, says Rabbi Nechemia, you have to go according to the most supportive evidence. Ah, therefore, says Rabbi Chiya. Now you understand? The end of the Mishnah is brilliant. It's teaching us that numbers count, but only where they're not kosher eidim. So therefore, now we can try to apply the din of Rabbi Nechemia to the Mishnah. And as we're going to see, there are two ways of applying Rabbi Nechemia. One way of applying Rabbi Nechemia is that he says this din across the board, meaning that even if you would have one kosher witness, the one kosher witness is being accepted not truly as testimony, but as evidence. In which case, even if there were a kosher witness, the number of people that were disagreeing with him would be relevant to the case. The other way that we understand Rabbi Nechemia is that no, this halacha of koma kom that the Torah believes in eid echad, even psulim or kosher, is not to say that the single aid himself is only supportive evidence when he's a kosher aid. There I agree with Ula. If the Torah believes in aid echad, it gives him the din of real aidim. But suppose that first witness was himself not a kosher witness, and he would be believed. But over there, the number of supporting evidence in the other direction would be very relevant. That would be the way that the Mishnah needed to be understood. So we're going to explain the Mishnah now according to both of these approaches in Rabbi Nechemya. Okay. And what is Rabbi Nechemya? The Tanya. Rabbi Nechemya, the Tanya. Rabbi Nechemya Omer, Kol makom sheheemina Torah eid echad, halech achar rov deot. You always go according to the number of opinions. And therefore, now this is the first version of Rabbi Nechemya, and therefore, even if the first aid was a kosher aid, so let's say he's a normal ish echad, and two women come against him, that's exactly the same as two men coming against him, because basically you're going to be makhish, and you will follow the two against the one. But since we're talking about aidim psulim, it's exactly the same. If it's shtei nashim be'ish echad, kishnei anashim be'ish echad. Therefore, what's the Mishnah telling me? Is that if one eid says she was tmeya, and two eidim say she was not, she would be shota, even if the first eid was a kosher eid, and the two later ones are not kosher eid. That's the chiddush of the Mishnah. You go according to rov deot. And because of that, we have Rov Deot saying she was Tamiya, Lo Aita Shota. That's one approach. Ve'ikri Amre. The other way of learning Rabbi Nechemya is that there's two different issues. First of all, there's the question if it's an eight kosher that the Torah accepted as two Eidim. Well, then you can't have Eidim Psulim running up against the Eidus kosher. So according to this, if the first aid was actually a kosher aid, then I don't care if you got 100 psui aidas, it's irrelevant. Because even me'an nashim are nami ke'ed echad damya. And therefore, it would be not believed against him, would be a suffix. But in the Mishnah, you know what we're talking about? Where first the aid, the single aid that came, so the aid echad was an isha. And therefore, the way to understand Rabbi Nechemya with this approach is that Rabbi Nechemya Omer, Kom makom sheheemina Torah eid echad halecha charov deot. That's all that he said. The next piece was our interpretation of the implications of that statement. So in the Igri Amri, the implications are as follows. Osu shtei nashim bi'isha achat, to be the equivalent of shnei anashim bi'isha achat, and therefore we would go according to Rov Deos. But in this approach, ein achinami, if the two eidim were posel eidus against a single eid who was a kosher eid, there we would go according to Ula, and we would say once you've accepted a kosher eid as two eidim, then it would be basically Pipalgava Palgadami. I don't care how many people come, and it would be a case of half and half, and therefore she would drink. So therefore, according to this, where we're talking about where they come together as we started, if they walk in at the same time, so then she's definitely shota, because we're misupak. If they come one after the other, so if an eid kosher came first, according to this, and said that nitma'a, so then he's considered to be the equivalent of shnei eidim. And then if later on people come to say that, no, she was not nitma'a, so then again, since he's kosher, if eidim ksherim, two eidim ksherim come, so then we have trei u'trei. But if you have 100 non-kosher eidim, the first one is considered to be two. And all of the non-kosher ones, no matter how many they are, is considered to be one. Because Rabbi Nechemya in this version never said that they're believed against a kosher eid. And therefore, we believe that first eid that she did nitma'a, and because of that, she doesn't drink. She only drinks when we have a suffix. Now, suppose we start with the last case, in which we have, starting with two edus that are psulim, who say she was nitma. One aid comes in and says, no, she was not nitma, but he's a kosher aid. So then it once again is the equivalent of trey or trey, and therefore we're mesopic, and we're mevar the suffix with the shtiyah. So the Mishnah that says over here, the last case, that if you have two Adim, and we said according to Rabbi Chiya, this is all Adim Psulim. If two Adim Psulim said that she was Tmeya, and one Aid says that she was not Tmeya, that she would not drink, because we believe the Rov has got to be talking about where both the first and the latter were Pasul. Okay, so now the question is, how does that stack up against the Zeh Achar Zeh? I mean, the Pashtas from Rashi, there's different approaches, I mean, among the Achronim and how to understand Rashi. But certainly the Pashtas in Rashi is that if even they come one after the other, an Edus that is Pasul never becomes the equivalent of two Edim Keneged a kosher Ed, even if they came first. That's the simple Pashtas according to Rashi. Not everybody agrees with this. Okay, so now what we're talking about over here, as I said before, these are general rules, and not surprisingly, sneaking up in the next Mishnah is the other place where the Torah believed the Eid Echad, which is the Egla Rufa, and which therefore we're going to be discussing over here as well. Okay, so therefore, Alibet Rabbi Chiya, the two Boves in the end of the Mishnah are talking about specifically where we have Edus that are Psulim, and over there we go according to Rabbi Nechemia, goes according to the Rov, Deis, because it's not testimony, it's simply evidence, and then we have the two Lashonis and Rabbi Nechemia, which is this true even if one of them is kosher, or is it true only if you're stacking up the Rov Deis of Psulim against Psulim? But one thing that isn't clear is, what's the difference between the last two cases? I mean, basically, you're telling me the din over here is there in order to teach me Rabbi Nechemia? Okay, so you did that with the first case. Why did you need that last case, which seems to be talking about the same situation, where you go according to the Rov? The only difference between the two cases is that the first cases that we brought, where one says she was, I mean, it's basically the same thing, right? It's just that the first case, the Rov said she was Tyra, or not that she was Tyra, but that she wasn't Nitmate in front of them. And in the last case, the Rov says that she was Nitmate. But, I mean, the Svara that we go or leave it a Rov Deus is the same in both cases. So why do I need two cases? Says the Gemara, because Ma'u de Tema, Ki Azlin an Basar Rov Deo, that's Dafka, where it's going to end up being a Chumra. So there the Torah says, okay, so then follow the Rov. So if the Rov says that she's supposed to drink, she has to drink that water. So that's the first case. But how about where it would be Lakula, and where they say she doesn't have to drink Lakula lo azlina? Kamash malan, that in either event, we go alibet Rabbi Nechemia, and we follow the Rov, deis, and again, depending on the first Lashon, second Lashon, if it's Psulim against Psulim, or even if it's Psulim against one eight kosher, and Hadron Alach, of course, we're going to be reviewing this, Mi Shekine, Sir Richard.
Bli Neder, Funken Dehele Kaperer.